702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
It's just gone 7 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday evening. Welcome to it. This is The Money Show. It's brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Get your copy of the Africa Financial Markets Index report at cib.absa.africa and explore Africa's possibility in detail. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. My name is Arabile Kumete, standing in for Bruce Whitfield then on this Friday evening. I'll tell you a little bit later where Bruce Whitfield has actually gone off to. And here's a hint. I've had to now swing in to the office today in order to be able to get into the show today. A whole lot still happening, of course. None more important than the US election happening at this point in time. A whole lot of question marks as to whether we'll get a result on that even by the weekend. It looks to be raging on more and more, with Donald Trump even supposedly set to take things a little bit further, either asking about for a recount or even taking it to the courts. It will get very interesting there. But on the show today then, well, Dudumieni continues to try and stonewall the State Capture Commission of Inquiry. Karen Morn chats to us about that and just how significant a deal this is. I mean, Chief Justice Raymond Zondo has also said that he will continue to give statements and notions about proceedings, whether or not Dudumieni actually gives out her testimony with relation to things that have happened at SAA. So it may even be in her best interests. So stonewalling may not necessarily help. Also, South Africa's black empowerment laws may not be helpful for investment into the country. How so, though, is the question after we've been having them for so long. We'll also get into our Friday file. Khamisa Coffee is the comeback coffee campaign that we talk about today. Of course, because it is Friday, the brutal biz quiz also comes up. All that and a whole lot more coming up. But first, let's get into it. This is The Money Show.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, then. So the broad-based black economic empowerment deals in South Africa are said to be very contentious, according to what is a new study by the EU-funded EUSA Partners for Growth, an organization that actually says that they believe that the effects of BEE from South Africa could have far-reaching consequences and may even impact the drive to attract more investors into South Africa. Now, black empowerment laws in South Africa have been around for quite some time now. And for this to have been a new study, does it mean we have to reconsider? Does it mean we have to relook at how we do black empowerment laws in South Africa? Ganki Matabane is the chief executive at the Black Business Council and joins us on the line now. Ganki, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. Always good chatting to you. It's a situation where I suppose we need to ask ourselves, number one, has black economic empowerment in South Africa been successful?
Evening, Arabi and the 702 listeners. I think when we look at the BEE Act in particular, if you look at also then what has actually happened in real life in businesses, the Act was proclamated in 2003. So this is 2020, which means the Act is a few years in implementation. But when we look at the actual economy, for example, take the employment equity report that is produced by the Department of Labor on an annual basis. The people who are running the economy, I think more than 70% of the CEOs of private companies are still the same as the ones pre-1994.
Yeah.
And then if you look at most of those people, they are 40, in their 40s and the 50s, which means some of them have started working post 1994, but they are already CEOs, and then there's been other black people who have been there before them. So I think it's unfair for the EU to then say firstly, to say that there's no clarity, there's no policy certainty as far as the Act is concerned, because from 2003, people understand now that BEE is an imperative, that we've got sector codes that actually determine how empowerment is measured.
And that
has been clear. I think maybe people, because they have not done well in implementing B, they are trying to find excuses.
So has it been effective then? Are you saying that the trial period of the last 17 years hasn't been long enough to give B a chance? I'm just playing devil's advocate and saying this is what effectively the EU is saying. We've tried to do it for the past 13 years. In some instances, you made note of how you still have a majority of white leaders within South Africa's corporate sectors in particular. Of course, other sectors of the economy as well, and yet we still sit here saying we need to continue with BEE. Should we be looking at another way of doing things, not because we're in agreement with the EU, but because maybe it hasn't worked?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge has been the implementation. The people who are implementing it are not genuine. Most of the time they are doing it for compliance purposes, where they are looking at how many points do you get if you appoint a black woman, how many points if you appoint a person with a disability. They are not doing it for principles.
Yeah.
They are doing it as a compliance. So what I think needs to be tightened is the monitoring and implementation to ensure that it gets implemented. Or what gets implemented is what is called the spirit of the act, or the spirit of transformation, whereby if a company says I'm level one, and you go and visit that company, you should be able to find level one there. But most of the time, companies come and say they are level ones, but when you visit them, they look like a pre-1994 company. And again, it's because of the lack of transformation at the top.
So how do we get there? How do we get that pickup then, particularly at the top, but also middle management, right? We've seen even some corporations put a CEO of color in charge. But in between, there's no structure to try and raise the next black CEO within the company.
Yeah, I think if you look at how companies operate, the powerful people in companies are what they are called profit centers, and then you'll have cost centers. So there are positions that are cost center based that are mainly given to black people, and those don't necessarily have power. And even from a succession planning point of view, both of those positions are not meant to be. Ultimately, given the top responsibility, and if then the CEO and the people who are running the profit centers are not transformed, the entire value chain of for example of procurement opportunities will also not be given to the to black people and women. So that's where the focus of transformation should be, and there should be a carrot and stick type of an approach from government to say, if you look at the Employment Equity Act, those plans are submitted by companies. They are not a company will come and say, no, in 2 years I think I will appoint a black person here and here, but they don't meet their own target. So they must be a stick that comes into place to say, if you are not able to meet your target like this and this, this is the stick. Either you are not going to be able to do business with the state and all those type of things, so that the CEOs can feel it in their pocket. If people cannot feel it in their pocket, they are not going to do it.
Yeah. All right. Look, Kganki, I think it's a contentious matter nonetheless, right? It's certainly going to take a little bit for South Africa to get it right over the long run even. Perhaps they raise questions of how we should be doing this. Maybe they're pressing us to do it correctly so that we're able to create a more investment-friendly environment. But really appreciate your time, though, this evening. Kganki Matabane is the Chief Executive at Black Business Council.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Now I'm standing in for Bruce Whitfield, who's playing in the BCX Supersport Shootout, the most prestigious amateur celebrity golf and lifestyle event in South Africa. It features leaders in business, sport, as well as government. Now the event is taking place at the beautiful Pearl Valley in Paarl, and it's happening the whole weekend. Catch all the action then on Supersport Channel 213. That's on Friday the 6th of November from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday it happens from the 7th of November from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday also has a date, 11:30 until 2:30 p.m. Now, I bet you'd need to try and spot Bruce and see if he has any of those golfing skills.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
It's the long-ranging saga that we continuously go back towards. I don't know if we've ever seen somebody just perhaps not willing to answer questions as much as this. Ones that perhaps she could have answered and gotten herself out of some muddy situations. Even seeing a few headlines saying that Dudu is in a little bit of a Dudu situation. Dudu Mieni continuing to stonewall the State Capture Commission of Inquiry, trying to find out as much as possible out of the SAA saga, as the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo and, of course, the legal experts there. Oh, man, it just keeps on going. Legal journalist then, Karen Morn, joins us on the line right now. Karen, I don't think this week has been a week where I've seen the Deputy Chief Justice any more frustrated. Perhaps even angry could be a push as well. It hasn't been easy.
Well, I think what's been interesting is that, you know, this last week has really given us extraordinary levels of insight into the thinking of the State Capture Inquiry in relation to the evidence with regard to Dudu Mieni. And why that has happened is that oftentimes when you have a questioning, answering situation, the answers tend to supersede the logic of the questions. Now we have a roadmap, essentially, for what the State Capture Inquiry has as evidence against Dudu Mieni. We have a real sense that outside of her providing her input, they have some pretty substantive evidence on a range of issues, not just in relation to SAA, in relation to BASASA, in relation to her connections to the State Security Agency, the Jacob Zuma Foundation, some fascinating evidence about payments allegedly, replicating a sort of potential, conduit of alleged money laundering in terms of the way those payments were made through her son's company, but really getting a fascinating insight into what exactly the State Capture Inquiry is investigating.
How does this stand in good stead, though, just continuously not answering any questions? I mean, is that helpful at all for her case anyway?
No, not at all. I think what's become very clear is that, you know, Kate Hofmeyr repeatedly saying there's independent evidence. We have, you know, even from the BASASA allegations that she had provided BASASA with insight into the Hawks investigation into them, the issue of the Sheraton carpet, you know, Frank Dutton, he was an investigator in the TRC, interestingly enough, going to the Sheraton and matching the carpet. Other witness statements about travel that, for instance, was allegedly paid by BASASA but not declared by Dudu Mieni. Evidence that she, in fact, had declared a pen and notepad but hadn't declared the substantially expensive stays allegedly at the Sheraton, Beverly Hills Hotel, et cetera, et cetera. A real matrix of evidence. And what Kate Hofmeyr does so well is that she, she sketches a map of what she's trying to do. And I think all of those, you know, answers or refusal to answer is allowing the State Capture Inquiry to turn around and say, we've presented you with this substantive evidence. We have this witness evidence that's been provided. You have chosen not to dispute that. You've chosen not to necessarily provide any counter to it. And in the light of what appears to be pretty compelling evidence, we are going to, in many of these circumstances, going to be able to make inferences against you.
Yeah.
So the silence is not going to help her. What has been interesting, Arabile, is that she has used it, much as former President Jacob Zuma has, to vocalize this continuing narrative that those within his political spectrum adopt, that simply the Zondo inquiry is designed to perpetuate factional political dynamics, and that both she and he are being unfairly targeted, she because she is associated with him.
Have they relayed any sort of proof of that? Have they made note of particular references or instances in which they specifically feel that the State Capture Commission of Inquiry is laid to lay bare against them, particularly because of the relationship between Tutu Mieni and former President Jacob Zuma that, of course, is fairly well known?
Well, I mean, it was an interesting thing because at one stage, Tutu Mieni refusing to answer questions about whether she knew that fraud was a crime and that fraud was bad. That was one of the questions put to her by the Deputy Chief Justice. The following day, getting very angry and upset and saying, a woman of her stature should never be asked these kind of things. She was award-winning chairperson, et cetera, et cetera. But, not really, outside of saying that there was, suggesting there was a level of disrespect to the questions, there hasn't been a massive amount of evidence. There has been a lot of talk about the narrative. We constantly see this language around the narrative, around perpetuating the persecution of a particular political alignment.
Yeah.
I think what's going to be necessary is in the coming weeks, because we know Arabile, the inquiry has a very short time of space in which to continue his work.
Yep.
President Cyril Ramaphosa expected to come and be addressed on this Bofasa issue, which of course was something that continues to be somewhat of a politically thorny matter. The cross-examination of Pravin Gordhan by Tom Oyane's lawyers also coming up. So those are going to be moments that those on the side of that particular rhetoric will be examining quite closely. And I think the inquiry is going to be very careful, have to be very careful in the way that it does deals with those particular moments in its history in terms of, providing positive proof that, in fact, it is not pursuing a factional political agenda. But there is no real evidence of that at this point. Outside, of course, of the pending Jacob Zuma recusal application,
yeah,
the Lucky Montana attempts to have Zondo impeached and other matters.
Yeah, whew. It just keeps on rolling on. Do we know who exactly comes on next week? Is Tutu Mieni still on the stand as we continue into next week?
Well, they are trying to. They were expecting to, finalize with her within the 3 days, but now, obviously, she's going to have to come onto the witness box and finalize some of her evidence. We know, of course, the big name is, of course, former President Jacob Zuma. He was expected to appear the 21st to the 25th of November. And, of course, a big discussion going on between from the inquiry's lawyers. He has told his lawyers that if he doesn't intend to honor that subpoena because of his pending recusal application, it's unclear whether that's been filed or not, then they will go to the Constitutional Court to seek to compel him to honor the subpoena. And that will really be the first time in democratic South African history that that has happened.
All of the ways in which to waste the taxpayers' money and not move ahead with what is really at hand. Karen Morn, legal specialist reporter, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time here on The Money Show, chatting about Tutu Mieni as she tries to continue to stonewall the State Capture Commission of Inquiry.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Well, it's been a really great day for the markets as well, even on the local front. More than 2% gained on the local index. Some positive numbers even coming out of the gold shares as well. Let's chat to Gary McNamara from Sanlam Private Wealth joining us now as well. Gary, thank you so much for the time. So a positive tilt to that market picture, even though it seems there's a sense of volatility in the race to the White House out in the United States. And of course, all eyes would surely be on that.
Absolutely, yes. Good evening. It was a good day on the market, and certainly the expectations were not for it to be as strong as it ended up being, because the American market was indicating a slight weaker day today. And the real drivers of our market, as you've referred to, gold, where people are talking about potentially a weaker dollar going forward, with Biden looking like he's sure in for the presidency with quite a lot of stimulus that's going to be coming through there. But the real drivers on our market here, the Naspers share price, which they announced earlier on in the week, buybacks with a big discount to the underlying asset there being Tencent. Big player in our market, and it's had a very strong week. And then the other one with Richemont announcing the results early this morning, and the market liked that. So they've had two very good days as well. And as you say, the resources have had a reasonably good day as well. Only one that's really lagging a little bit here is the banks are still really battling to get going forward at the moment.
Yeah, let's unpack Richemont a little bit up as well. In announcing their set of earnings, of course, overall sales declining by, what is it now, 26% odd or so.
Yes.
But their Chinese sales were doing fairly well, so they've decided to bulk up a little bit more on that Chinese segment. Perhaps teaming up with Alibaba as well as the other online retailer called Farfetch. How good a deal is that?
Yeah, I think the market definitely liked it. Bearing in mind that 25% negative was for the full 6 months. The quarter was a little bit better than that. And I guess what we're seeing with a lot of these companies is even though the numbers might still be negative, they are actually better than expected. So the market looked through them and quite liked, as you say, quite a nice recovery in the China market. Europe's still really battling, and I think that's a function of maybe less travel happening. So people are rather staying at home in the Chinese market and buying there, which pushed those sales up. The jewelry number was very good, but watch sales still a little bit weak. But as you say, I think the market really looking at that tie up with Alibaba and the online digitalization of the luxury goods market from that side. So yeah, market really liked it. They've had 2 days of above 10% recovery in that share price. So the market really liked those numbers.
Yeah, Gary, help me understand here. Why would the oil price then get an absolute hammering today, going down, what is it, more than 1.3%, in fact? So it's still sitting at around $40 a barrel here.
Yeah, it's actually just crept under the $40 a barrel, and I think it's really the concerns the globe's got with the secondary COVID effects that we're seeing and the shutdown in Europe. We've seen the UK going into another 30-day lockdown. And I think the market's coming to the realisation that next year is not just going to be business as usual. There certainly was a view a couple of months ago that, you know, vaccine maybe will alleviate some of these pressures, but there's no doubt that the world is still grappling with second round effects of COVID, and that's going to reduce demand for oil. You know, airlines are really not getting going in the sky. People are still working from home, so there's a lot less demand. And we're seeing what we saw in March, April, a massive buildup of supply again in the oil price. And it's certainly not down at levels that it was at the center of the problem, but, you know, under $40 is a very low, and that's an indication that the world is very much worried about the second round effects of COVID.
Sustained levels at these prices?
Yeah, you know, I think once things normalize, I think the oil price will recover to probably somewhere, in our view, around 50, 55, bearing in mind the Russians and the Saudis did cut in the first time about 7% of their production, which did alleviate some of the supply pressures that were there. But I wouldn't think it's going to go too much lower. But as you say, it depends on how the COVID outlook comes going forward.
Gary McNamara from Sanlam Private Wealth. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon as we catch up on that market commentary.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Get your copy of the Africa Financial Markets Index Report at cib.absa.africa and explore Africa's possibility in detail. That's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP. The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
All right, this Friday File then this time around is we chat about Khamisa Coffee. And I hope I said the name correctly. Theo Snickers is the co-founder at Khamisa Coffee and joins us on the line, and we'll chat about every aspect here. But Theo, let me first get it correct. Is it really Khamisa Coffee?
Hi, Arabile. Yeah, that is perfect. Khamisa is the original name for Cape Town. It is the Khoisan name for Cape Town, meaning place of sweet water.
Oh, wow. I actually thought it was the Zulu word for, you know, open your mouth, which open is what mouth. I would certainly do for coffee, too.
It's a brilliant coincidence, and it also means shirt in Italian, which isn't quite such a good fit. It's a slightly different spelling.
Wonderful nameplay, actually, across the board there. But let's talk about it then. Comeback Coffee Campaign. Tell us what that was about and why you decided to go on that path. I mean, just reading up on the story, I thought it was absolutely amazing. You guys tried to help as many sort of restaurants, cafes, etc., as possible with this. And and it seemingly was very successful, particularly out in Cape Town.
Yes, so maybe just for the benefit of your listeners that aren't familiar with Comeback Coffee, what the campaign tries to do is to assist establishments that serve coffee, whether you're a coffee shop, restaurant, hotel, business, whoever is in the game of producing coffee for either clients or staff, have obviously been affected by the lockdown, and cash flow is a dirty word at the moment. So what we came up with was to give people access to 6 kilos of coffee, 2 kilos of hot chocolate, and 1 kilo of chai, and allow them to pay for that in 90 days. And if they reorder during the 90 days, we discount the initial order with 50%. And if they reorder twice, the initial order is totally for free on us. And we figured out that this allows an institution to generate somewhere between 12 and 15,000 rands worth of income, which obviously then allows them to purchase the next batch of coffee. And, you know, obviously for a larger restaurant, 15,000 rand isn't going to bridge the cash flow crisis that they're in at the moment, but it's a step in the right direction. It allows them to get their coffee going again, and for a lot of smaller guys, it is really what they need to get back up on their feet.
Yeah. Theo, do you have an exact number on perhaps how many sort of cafes, restaurants or stores or whatever the case was that you've been able to help throughout this this process, and how many of them have returned then to be able to, you know, get back to you, not just after 90 days, but really on a continued basis? Yeah.
So, Arabile, what's interesting is that we have had a very big influx in new business as a result of Comeback Coffee, but not as many people as we expected have gone through the official Comeback Coffee channels, which is you fill in a form on our website, you know, you answer a couple of questions, and then, you know, off you go. So we've been surprised at how many people have referred to the fact that we are doing the Comeback Coffee, and people have approached us, but less people than expected have actually officially asked for the starter pack. But we are carrying on with the offer till the end of the year, and sure, by the looks of things, even after that.
Wow.
So, you know, it's up to now, it's only been a handful of people that have officially taken up the Comeback Coffee offer,
yep,
which has been surprising to us. I think maybe some people think it's a bit too good to be true or wonder what the catch is.
but you just never know, I suppose.
Yeah, but we've been very pleasantly surprised by the publicity that the campaign has created and the influx of business as an indirect result of it. So people, I think, are paying attention, and they take note of our willingness to help. And obviously, I also got to say, you know, within our existing client base, we've been working very closely with our existing customers, because they've obviously also been affected, you know, and some of our more established restaurants on wine farms and so on, you know, who would normally order 30 kilos of coffee at a time, when they started reopening, their opening orders were 2-3 kilos.
Sure.
So, and that really made us sit up and pay attention. And that's when we thought we got to do something to try and assist the people that are trying to reopen.
Theo, what happens to the future then? What are you hoping to get out of this? And I don't mean just financially, but really just where's the future of Khamisa Coffee going? What is your hope within even the coffee industry?
Well, that's a great question. So I really get a kick out of working with people and helping people realize their true potential. And it's interesting how coffee has become our vehicle to achieve that. So, you know, we work with small independent entrepreneurs who have a coffee machine and a grinder, and that's everything, right up through to a hotel chains. But the theme is the same. You know, it's if our clients do well, we do well. So it's really working with the people within the businesses to figure out how we can grow our market and how we can reach people through the joy that comes with a good cup of coffee.
How do you get the best deal, though, for yourselves predominantly? I mean, for you to be able to do this, you have to try and get, yes, high quality, but also at the best possible price or competitive price, right? So at the point of origin, yourselves getting into a good deal, how do you make sure that you get that right too?
Yeah, so it really is very much relationship-based. So we are very excited to have, over the years, I've been in the coffee game now for close to 10 years, and over the years, you build up relationships and you kind of work your way up the value chain, and you figure out who you want to buy your coffee from and who's got your best interest at heart, and that relationship builds from there. But we build our business effectively on three pillars. It's quality, service, and price. And if I can deliver on those three aspects, then we find that our clients don't have to go and look for another coffee roasting company to supply them with coffee. And it's because we encourage longevity in relationships that we can grow together, that, you know, when times are tough like now, we have been absorbing the crazy currency fluctuations as much as possible, and we have not increased our prices since end of 2018. And it gets a little bit tight on our end, but we feel that if we can help with our clients right now, it'll be worth it in the long run. You know, I think the trust relationship between us and our clients is one that's of utmost importance.
Yeah. Well, I certainly wish you all the best. Theo, thank you so much for the time this afternoon on joining us here on The Money Show. Theo Snickers is the co-founder at Khamisa Coffee with the Comeback Coffee Campaign. It certainly has been really great. Trying to save as many coffee shops and cafes as possible, increasing turnover. And of course, in the time of COVID-19, it's certainly very, very significant and important. We're going to move on to our next part of the show then. Of course, it is Friday, so we're going to get into the Brutal Biz Quiz. Then we're going to start things off by perhaps giving you the question right now, and then we're going to take a quick ad break. Of course, remember the number you can call is 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Those are the numbers to call then to get in on winning the title of the Brutal Biz Quiz Champ this evening. So the first question then, which we'll get an answer to right after this, is which part of state-owned company was Yakekwinana the chair of? So which part of the state-owned company was Yakekwinana the chair of? All of that in the Brutal Biz Quiz right after this.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Get your copy of the Africa Financial Markets Index Report at cib.absa.africa and explore Africa's possibility in detail. That's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP.
So, of course, getting into the Brutal Biz Quiz then this Friday evening. The question we've asked is which part of state-owned company was Yakekwinana the chair of? The number to call, of course, to get in on the action, 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567 in Cape Town. We do have Mzukisi on the line from Midrand to share perhaps in the answer on this one. Mzukisi, the answer here?
It's SAA Technical.
That's 100% correct there. The former SAA board member, Yakekwinana, did indeed receive a lesson on board ethics, even at the State Capture Commission of Inquiry from Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo. She, of course, did flounder and even raise eyebrows about corporate governance at state-owned enterprises during her questioning this week. All right. Well done on that one, Mzukisi. Let's try and get you towards the end here, right? Let's see now. Which one, if you can get to this one? Of course, these are aspects that have been discussed across the show as well this week. Which James Bond refuse to appear on Apple's adverts. Quick hint on this one. 90 years old.
Sean Connery.
Oh, I bet I didn't have to even give you that clue, actually. You're quite right. The Scottish actor was best known for his portrayal, of course, of James Bond, then being the first to bring the role to the big screen and appearing in seven of the spy thrillers. Sean, unfortunately, did pass away peacefully in his sleep in the Bahamas. He famously declined to be in the Apple Mac advert, actually. He called it Steve Jobs, a mere computer salesman, while he was bleep James Bond. Well, interesting enough. Anyway, let's get into our third question then, Mzuki. And hopefully we can take you to the end. I really hope so. The next question is, which private bank lost its key this week? Which private bank lost its key this week?
I'd say...
Think about the logo. Think about a logo that has what looks like a lion... look at that. I'm giving clues here on this one. It's a significant departure, of course, from its existing logo. But yes, Rand Merchant Bank changed its branding. It's a brand refresh, that is, the first since 2006. Of course, it does keep the lion's head, but it does do away with the key that it used to hold. All right, the fourth question here. Which JSE-listed company brought Domino's Pizza and Starbucks Coffee to South Africa? Which JSE-listed company brought Domino's Pizza and Starbucks Coffee to South Africa? As we said, they're JSE-listed. The CEO is Carlo Gonzaga. And all I can say is that on the tongue, it had a little bit of a good, I don't know. What do you think? It was a little bit of a good... if I put something on my tongue, it's a, and I just want to
taste.
There we go. So it's Taste Holdings. I think I'm getting good at these clues, if you ask me, more than anything else. Yeah, Carlo Gonzaga was, of course, this week's shapeshifter, of course, and he was the CEO of Taste Holding as well, and that brought those international brands to South Africa. We're nearly there. We're nearly there. Look, I'm pushing you on, Mzuki. So I'm trying to get you to be the champ this week. Don't worry. We're getting you to the end, I promise. Who wanted to float an ant on the Shanghai Stock Exchange this week? Listen to it again. Who wanted to float an ant on the Shanghai Stock Exchange this week?
To float an ant.
To float an ant.
Clue?
Alibaba.
Oh, Jack Ma.
Did I not just give you the answer? That wasn't even a clue anymore, right? Yeah, but true. What was supposed to be perhaps the world's largest initial public offering was indeed halted at the last minute. The Chinese financial company is called Ant Group, and it was set to go public on Thursday. All right, let's get into the last and final question then, Zukisi. Look, I've really pushed you on. I'm going to try and not give you a clue on this one, right? You have to get it right for me, please.
We'll try to.
Capitec Bank. Who did they partner with to bring what it calls its first full home loan offering?
Is it Better Bond?
I'm going to give you one more try. It's not okay. Better Bond.
SA Home Loans?
Ah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. There it is. There it is, Mzuki. So you are our brutal biz quiz champion this Friday evening. Thank you so much for playing and being a part of it. You are the champ. All six questions. Yes, with a little bit of hint and a little bit of help here and there. But you know what? We all need it once in a while, right? Thank you so much for joining and being a part of it today, Mzukisi. They're joining us for our Brutal Biz Quiz. The Stellenbosch-based banking group launched what it calls its first full home loan offering on Tuesday. It says the offering is built on the principles of simplicity and affordability, with the product having one of the fastest application processes in the country. Capitec there, teaming up with SA Home Loans. Supposed to take 5 minutes to get that application done. Whether that's really the case, I suppose it's not a bad idea to get the CEO onto the show and perhaps at the same time apply for a bond and see if it really does fit into that amount of time. So interestingly enough, the markets today going up indeed, a good gain, in fact, more than 2% higher for the JSE All Share today as we close out the show here this evening. What gets very interesting is just where the markets will head into next week. Of course, the big question mark is just around what happens with the US elections. Do we see a Trump victory in some way or other? It seems like he may have to haul himself back on this one. Or is it just going to be a long protracted situation where Donald Trump takes things to the courts and it rages on and on for some time? Of course, he did try to fight Michigan. He tried to fight Wisconsin. And now Pennsylvania has turned blue. And that's called the Rust Belt, or perhaps the blue wall that the Democrats have wanted back for quite some time. Now they might just have it. We're in the late 90s in terms of percentage of voting. Donald Trump, as usual, not holding back by calling it a farce, calling it perhaps a cheat scenario. But Joe Biden, on the other hand, insisting that indeed people needed to remain cool and wait. But which one trumps the other? Excuse the pun on this one. Where do we see the voting going by the end of this picture? And what will that actually mean for policies, not just in South Africa, but certainly across the rest of the globe? If Joe Biden comes in, let's remember that there may be a change of circumstances, so more volatility across the market picture, because we don't necessarily know if he will be as conservative as Donald Trump. One thing the United States in some parts is hoping for is that stimulus effort and that stimulus bill, that second one that they're hoping to perhaps pick up and boost that economy, because it has struggled for the last couple of months. It hasn't picked up as many would have thought or hoped that it certainly would pick up. Yes, unemployment has dropped back lower, but it still doesn't sit anywhere near that 4% figure that it had just before COVID-19. Indeed, the pandemic has certainly impacted everything across the board. So let's see what happens. Maybe we get some answers on Monday. Thank you so much for joining us then this Friday evening. My name is Arabile Kumete, standing in for Bruce Whitfield. It's The Money Show. Enjoy your evening.